Welcome to the Creative Play and Podcast Network. Join us as we share our favorite RPGs, one-shot games, tabletop games, reviews, and convention panels. Sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Kelly, aka Trixie from Ragnarok and Roll, assigned to Ragnarok Story, and Tilda Wimblewick from D&D Journey of the 5th Edition. First off, I would just like to say thank you to everyone for listening to our varied adventures, as well as for rating us on iTunes and RPGpodcast.com. If you haven't rated us yet, we would greatly appreciate it if you could. And if you're looking for more ways to support our efforts, we are now on Patreon, a great site where you can help us continue making more podcasts, as well as some special surprises for our patrons. If you can, please look us up at www.patreon.com/cppn. Every little bit helps. And again, thank you for listening.
Okay, so this panel is going to be about basically comic book heroes, modern heroes, and villains, obviously, and going over invisible disabilities, physical disabilities, mental illnesses, and
etc. There will, with talking about this, there will be some of the story arcs that we're going to be covering do have references sexual assault in them, especially when we're talking about Barbara Gordon and her storyline from The Killing Joke. So I just wanted to make sure that we're upfront telling that is a thing that is going to be, we're not going to be talking about it explicitly, but it's something that upfront that I want, that we were, that like it has to be mentioned.
Trigger warning.
Yes.
And I'm the commentary. I mean, you two have done most of the research. You have a lot of knowledge.
I'm just a nerd with encyclopedic knowledge.
No, as soon as we were talking about, because he was supposed to just be like assistant on this and go and like make sure everything was working, and we started talking about the panel and preparing for it, and then suddenly he starts feeling like so much about disabilities. And with each character, because you grew up with cartoons.
I grew up with a lot of like the X-Men cartoons. I've loved superheroes for my entire life, and I've watched almost every animated thing I could possibly get my hands on. And then I found graphic novels in my 20s, and then I continue watching any animated thing get my hands on. Now I also read as many graphic novels as I get my hands on, and I am ADHD, so I read things that stay in the brain forever, and I don't know how to get them out.
So when he was like going on that ADHD, I am super excited and obsessive, like talking about it. I was like, "You realize you're on the panel now, right?" He kind of laughed it off just a little bit, and then goes on again, and I was like, "No! You're on the panel now."
About the third superhero we were talking about is when I was like, "Oh yeah."
Yeah, we were just like,
this is probably a good thing. Although I did add a villain to the list,
yes,
which I feel accomplished for. But yeah, I'm just the peanut gallery today, guys. I'm so excited.
And then also one thing I want to also adjust when we're talking about disabilities with superheroes, other than some of the things, it can get to be a really sticky wicket sometimes because depending on the era we're talking about, it depends on the society's view on disability.
So you're
so we either get things that are very ableist, but in a way of, isn't this great? And especially through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, you can see it getting better, but it is very that. Or you get things that are a little bit more modern that are very much, this person's awesome. And look how awesome they are, and it's very celebratory.
Literally two examples popped in my head just now while you're saying that.
Right, shall we get...
Yeah.
Where shall we start?
I don't know where we shall start. Okay, so do you want to do mental illnesses, physical disabilities, or hidden disabilities?
Let's start with physical disabilities.
Okay. I think we can start with the ones that we see the most at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So people like Iron Man, who has a heart condition. And he very much, in a way, and of course I'm going to talk about Iron Man because he's absolutely my favorite, and there's more than just physical going on there. However, specifically for, you know, the man having a shard almost going into his heart and almost dying, no matter pretty much his scenario, or not having a heart at all, depending on the depiction. He go through a lot and is in a lot of pain, and it doesn't actually show, it's shown in a way in the Marvel cinematic universe, in the sense that it, how do I phrase this? Sorry guys, early morning brain. It shows in a sense that it doesn't make Iron Man all about the disability. You see him as, like, you know, arrogant, cocky, but also like the kind of like the not the huge hero, but the, what is that? The hero that also is like not hero-y?
Anti-hero.
A little bit anti-hero-y, more on the hero side, but in my opinion. But also depicts like certain subtle cues that does show that there are struggles there. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's mine. That was my favorite one.
I think their presentation of that is very balanced, in that it doesn't make it all about the disability,
yes,
that he has. But he does have to adapt, mm-hmm, and then move forward from there.
It's one thing I don't like how the MCU does it, and I'm not as versed in Iron Man in the animated or comics. I love that they have it, I love that they show it, but it's also very much depicted as something he needs to cure.
I can see that, yeah.
And
okay, yeah.
So I, where I like it, definitely, that it is very subtle of him treating it and living with it. That's one thing I'm not the hugest fan of, is when media goes, okay, we have this thing, let's cure it.
They did that in the third film, didn't they?
Yeah, they cured it in the third film.
At the end of the third film, he had surgery to have a shard.
And that's, I love, and like, it's one thing, like, with Star Trek, I love Star Trek with all of my heart. There have been so many lines in Star Trek that's like, oh, this person with a disability, Geordi's a really great example of that, because, like, yes, there's the visor that helps him, then later he gets bionic eyes. He gets eye implants, so he effectively cures his blindness.
That is the thing, also in Supernatural. One of my favorite series is Supernatural, and that's, you know, getting through villains, whatever. If you know Supernatural, there is a person that is like a father figure to the main characters, and he becomes paraplegic. And they make it to where he is so into suicidal ideation that he pretty much tries to kill himself. And doesn't think he can go on, doesn't think he can hunt ghosts and monsters anymore, or do anything. And then by the end of that season, they actually have him cured by making a pact with the demon. And it's...
Because it's like, that's how you cure, you know, that y'all, you know?
Yeah, like... We're
taking her to a crossroads later on today.
That's probably something that could be well incorporated. And I think we could talk about that for a good long time.
Oh, yeah.
Of the issue with how media depicts disabilities and how they're like, you know, either you're doomed or you're cured.
And you can kind of see that in what you were talking about with Sun Spider.
Yeah.
Who embraces the disability and has the spider silks coming out of.
Do you know who Sun Spider is? So Sun Spider is a newer addition to the Spider-Verse. She is actually a canonical character within Spider-Man. She started off as a fan creation, which the fact that someone made a fan creation of themselves and it became canon is absolutely amazing.
I love that.
So Sun Spider, the character, lives with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So she has EDS. In the comics, she is depicted with multiple mobility aids, wheelchair, crutches, a few different things. But when she is in her hero persona of Sun Spider, she uses crutches. And her crutches are her web slingers.
Which
is such a really great, and I, in my opinion, amazing form of actually showing and celebrating this disability, because it's not something that she needs to cure, because we don't need to cure it. You know, it's,
yeah,
everyone is everyone.
I'm not sure celebrating would be the right word. As much as like embracing what has happened.
Embracing the
early morning is
early morning.
I know. Hey, this is why we're here. Discussion. ADHD moment. I did just realize something. Do you know? Probably the reason Sunspider is such a well-developed character in terms of the adaptive ways that she does what she does is because she was designed by somebody who has it.
Yep.
It was a fan creation, so it was a personification of herself and how she could be a part of the Spider-Verse. And that's why she's so well developed and as a character, is because she was built by somebody who lives with it.
And that's actually something that's happening more and more in a lot of media with depiction of disability. You're starting to see more people who have these conditions, who are living with these conditions, writing for these things, writing the books, writing the graphic novels in writing rooms, on shows, going, no, let's not do that. This is how we actually live with this. Let's actually show it. And they show it in a way that is... that furthers a conversation. I'm going to hop to the other spectrum of that really quick, if that's okay.
Go for it.
And because the one thing, the other one that a lot of people bring up when you talk about disabilities in comics is the Killing Joke. I am not an Alan Moore fan. I'm just going to put this out right now. I think, honestly, most Alan Moore comics are the most edgelordy things on the planet. In the Killing Joke is when Barbara Gordon, who was the current Batgirl, has a traumatic spinal injury and turns into Oracle, who is a wheelchair user information source for Batman and a hero within her own right. The reason why I say it's the other end of that spectrum is because the depiction of her abuse, because the Joker shows up at her house, beats the crap out of her, and sexually assaults her. And that's how she got her injuries. And it is a way, it's to me, it's almost akin to them fridging her. Because it was a way to shock the audience into knowing how bad the Joker was. As not like we didn't know beforehand.
Yeah.
And so it was a way to, so they could have honestly left it out. They could have left it out of the Killing Joke all entirely, and it would have been the same.
I feel like there was a way to make Barbara Gordon disabled and empower it, and not bring in trigger warning sexual assault aspect.
I mean, that's the first thing he does, right? She walks up to the door and he shoots her through the door.
And
they could have just been
they
like,
could have
oh,
ended
no.
That's
there.
That's literally how it could have ended. It didn't need to get that dramatic.
And this is one of those ones at the time era that it was written is showing, is that kind of in that weird gray area of showing, hey, this person's overcoming and they're empowered by this and they're taking their power back. Which is really great in a way, but it's also very, you can tell that right now a lot of media, there are sensitivity consultants. There are consultants to show about like cultural sensitivities and like just like how to show disability in media, things like that. You know,
better representation.
Yep. 20, 30, 40 years ago, y'all, that was not a thing.
No.
And so a lot of times writing rooms were filled with a whole bunch of usually able-bodied, usually white men.
Yep.
And trying to write for disabled people and women, and that's why we get some really, I say, well-meaning
but
things.
But
okay.
Sometimes they're not thinking about that.
I
want to think about the story.
I think it also depends on the writer as well, because some of that, they're trying to target a specific audience, and so like we were talking about earlier, the chess thing for the feminization stuff, like, which is a different subject in general.
I had to inform her about the origins of Power Girl.
Who just... okay.
I was like, the people in the audience who you guys know, you know.
So...
anything rogue.
I
do like the fact that they did have it changed to, okay, I can't... I feel like it would have been... Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. Did, or question-wise...
Did they have her go through a phase of anger or like upset during
not
this?
Really.
Okay, so that is the problem, I would say, also there, because when you have such a big life change from like going from, and it is hard to depict in just like short form, but when you go through such a big life change, you definitely go through a phase of either anger, depression, upset, because your entire, like, for her, she had this cool thing where she could walk and help people physically and like go about and save people, and she can still do that, but there definitely wasn't, probably was not enough of a transition phase to when she became the Oracle. And that actually brings me up to kind of sort of, again, the opposite spectrum, Xavier from X-Men, who, his powers are so strong, if he gives them up, he can walk. If he has them, he's in a wheelchair because his legs don't work. And that, I don't really agree with that vibe as much, because I think there's like a separation that you can have.
There's a separation you can have, and it becomes a, I think what they did was they used it as a character crutch. I have to sacrifice this in order to help people this way.
And that's the thing, like, disabilities aren't sacrifice.
Buying.
Sorry,
we're interrupting
real quick.
Sorry. My
apologies.
Goodbyes are important.
Oh, no, come here.
Goodbyes have already been interrupted. It's fine.
You guys behave.
Get home safely.
Behave.
Sure.
Be in touch.
That was a great fire show.
I almost hugged you.
Yay.
Oh, wait, I'm going home again.
Oh,
never mind.
Enjoy the rest of the panel, guys. They're amazing.
It was a great fire show.
I'm sorry, what?
That was a great fire show last night. I'll see you when I get back to Pennsylvania.
Yay!
Well, I don't know about that. But
you know what I mean.
Yes.
Hey, if you can, tell me when you guys get home.
Okay.
We'll shoot you a message.
Cool. Thank
you.
Okay,
guys. So to help us get back on rails.
back to Xavier.
Back to his potential Xavier, and then go to invisible disability.
Yeah.
I actually have a question about somebody with a physical disability. Mm-hmm.
Go for it.
War Machine from the MCU.
Oh.
He falls and there's nothing to do, and then like he does have that period of, I can't handle this. I am angry. I cannot do what I can
like
do.
Modern,
and they just
That's modern MCU. I think does do a little bit of a better job with that, because even with Iron Man, there was a panic
suit
moment with and making the suit for Stark. So that does show like modern depictions are better.
I think so.
Because we actually have, we realize that, you know, our audiences are diverse. And a lot of people watch movies, a lot of people read comics, and now we have people going through brief periods, which is awesome.
Yeah, which is absolutely fantastic. And I think you touched on it before, is sensitivity consultants. Mm-hmm. And I think that's done a lot for media in general. And they're starting to understand that their crowds are not just cis white men. I mean, that's a very big crowd, and that's great. But you have so many others who will go above and beyond to consume that media if they feel that it is properly represented. If they can connect with a character who's marginalized in any way, be it, you know, your background culture, your race, your disabilities, you're going to go the extra mile to go see it and support it. So they're like, oh, we can have a really solid fan base if we just
do
properly
the thing.
Represent.
Yeah.
Do the thing. Let's just do the thing.
I am of the opinion that it is okay to have, like, you know, your what audience that you want, in the sense that, like, yeah, you can target cis white males because they have preference, but it's also incredibly important to involve other cultures and disabilities and like everything. The problem is the fact that it was only white cis males for so long.
For so long, we're getting beyond
that's
that.
That's why it's so important to try to bring in and make everything be equitable.
I do think, and I'll only touch on it briefly because it doesn't really pertain to what we're talking about. I do believe that has necessitated a little bit of changing the race or culture of certain characters when they can get away with it to forward the proper representation movement. And then you have the issue of, you know, certain fans going like, it shouldn't be like this.
Yeah.
That character wasn't like that before. It's fictional.
I'm going to do a small tidbit there. She will, like, see me rant when a disability comes up and it's not represented correctly.
Yes.
I'm like, I know what this is like. Yes. How dare you? Stop it.
Yes.
Okay. We are going to now switch. Unless you have another comment.
I have one more just to briefly touch on. If we go also modern movies, a modern not great depiction, in my opinion, is with the newer Shazam movies. With one of the characters who is a crutches user, but when he's powered, he flies. He's fully able bodied, and so he wants to spend more and more time powered because of that. And they actually they kind of just skate over it and make it a little bit of a joke.
Oh no!
And they never in a weird way. It's
that kid was so cool in the first movie.
In the first movie we had...
They did a great job. And then in the second movie, it's like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
You know what I would think would be actually cool in that sense? What if, like, you got superpowers, right? You also have a disability. But those superpowers are a little bit manipulative, like, because of your disability. Like, for example, what if his flying was off and he had problems doing flying because of the disability?
See, that's why we need sensitivity consultants.
Yeah.
That's why we need consultants.
I like this idea.
Because it
shows that, yes, your disability still has an effect, and you get to, like, kind of adapt to that scenario now that you have more things going on.
Yeah. And that would have been interesting. But we all know, most likely Hollywood, things like that, they don't go for the interesting, they go for the easy.
Yeah.
They go for the most easily read, the most easily translated.
That actor was in the It movies and was dealing with the inhaler a lot too. I mean, at that point we found out that wasn't real, but like,
yeah.
I think I've seen him portray at least two people that are just, I haven't seen him do anything.
That's the thing in Hollywood, they like finding people who can do, like, and that's across the board for anything in the marginalized group. They find people who can do it, who are able-bodied, and they don't think of, there might be people within that community
that
who are actors.
I have an exception that goes actually into the next category of invisible disabilities. Echo from, she has her own miniseries now, I think.
She does have her own miniseries.
Daredevil, yeah. She's a marginalized group, she's indigenous, she's an amputee, and she's deaf. The actress who plays Echo is deaf.
And also, I believe, an amputee.
Yes, she's both.
Yeah.
She was the absolute perfect fit.
She's an absolute perfect fit.
For Echo.
I just want to also take a little bit of time with deafness and disability, because that is also a... Depending on who you talk to... And I have friends who are within the deaf community. I am not in the deaf community. So I want to say that right now. Because there are people who are in the deaf community. A lot of times they're interpreters, things like that. Where it is personal from person to person, as if for the identifier as disabled.
Disabled, yeah.
And a lot of people in the deaf community, because the deaf community is a community within themselves with their own language. And literally, it's a full different language. ASL is not signed English. It's a full different language. It's actually more akin to French. And they are a community within themselves. So a lot of them don't take the moniker of disabled because of the fact that they have their own culture, they have their own language, they have their own things where they're fully, there are cities that are almost fully deaf. Like Rochester, New York is a really good example of that. So I just wanted to give that little disclaimer.
That's an excellent disclaimer because that kind of hits that gray area. Oh, did you
have any questions? I was just wondering if that was the same with blindness. Braille is kind of...
Not quite.
It's not apples and apples.
It's not, yeah. It's not, it's Braille is more of coded English.
Yeah.
ASL actually is full different grammar structures.
Right.
And you can sign things in ASL that don't translate into English, and English doesn't always translate into ASL though. So that's why I say it's a fully different, it is a fully, and that's a really good distinction between something that's encoded English versus a full different language.
Yeah, Braille is basically touching and trying to figure out letters and
it's
conversation.
It's a touchable alphabet, yeah.
Which is mostly the English language.
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure if they also had like a separate community.
Not that I'm aware. Not as
that'd be a
not that I'm aware of, or as deeply rooted.
Yeah.
Because the deaf community is extremely deeply rooted.
And I do want to.
I think also it's kind of that root line of the forms of deafness that have created this culture tend to be hereditary. So you'll have two deaf parents, and they can have kiddos that are either hearing or deaf, you know. But it's also that gray area of you can become deaf. So do you identify that as a disability, or is it just shifting over into a different culture? So I think that's
and
a really good gray area.
And in that culture, there's also differences.
There's
cultural differences in those as well.
So I do. I don't
back
know
to topic. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine. I don't know. If
meanwhile, in the city.
Technically, I don't know if this is physical or invisible with blindness. I would say it's a little bit of both, depending on how bad it is. However, I did want to touch on Daredevil real quick, in the sense that I kind of love the way they do that because they enhance something that actually happens with people that lose their senses. For example, I don't feel most of my body, and I have hypersensitivity in my right arm, and the places I can feel, I can smell things a lot better than I used to be able to. I can hear a lot better than I used to be able to. My eyes are finally going, but they used to be really, really good. However, like, when you lose one of your senses, your body adapts to it and starts trying to actually biologically make it to where you can be more survivable. And I know with blind people who have like talked and have seen interviews, they actually have the same thing. What they do in Daredevil is they enhance that to the point of like chaos, which I kind of enjoy. But that's just my personal
opinion. And there is proof that it is possible. There is a gentleman who figured out how to basically make his own sonar. He clicks in his mouth, and he took the time to figure out, okay, how long does it take for that click to echo back to me? And he can ride a bike, he's 100% blind, he can ride a bike through an obstacle course at a fair clip and not run into a single thing. Because he has super hearing, and he took the time to develop that skill as part of his adaptability.
And I think Daredevil is also one of those ones that, honestly, I haven't read all the Daredevil comics. I am passing familiar with Daredevil, where from what I have seen in almost every iteration, what I like about Daredevil is the fact that it's not, it was been written as a embracing the disability and showing how humans can adapt, even though he had a little bit more to that because there was a whole chemical spill in the eyes, but showing the adaptability of that and not being like, oh, this poor guy had a thing and he's an inspiration.
Okay, mental now?
Let's go mental.
Okay, I would say my biggest starter point introduction on this is you see a lot of villains with like dramatized illnesses, mental illnesses, more so than you see in heroes. And so I don't necessarily agree with that because it gives a stigmatism of how mental illnesses are problematic.
Mental illnesses create villainy.
And that's not true. And you see that with like schizophrenia, how some, obviously there's scenarios where you can manage that with medication and things like that. And it depends on, obviously.
So I have
Batman.
Yes. I was about to ask y'all. We're about to address that, because if I say Arkham Asylum, everyone knows Arkham Asylum. If I say Bloodhaven, how many of you guys know about Bloodhaven Penitentiary? Because Bloodhaven Penitentiary is the jail in Gotham.
Yeah.
It is the jail where Arkham, everyone knows, yeah. Everyone knows Arkham is the asylum.
So I have two counterparts to what you were saying, and it shows it. Iron Man, we're going to circle back to Iron Man, he has some mental stuff going on there.
Anxiety and alcoholism.
Yeah.
Anxiety, alcoholism, PTSD. And there's PTSD. One other, yes. One where his ego is
narcissism. Oh, it's narcissism.
Narcissism. He's a narcissist. He's working on it throughout the MCU universe, mm-hmm. But he starts out as absolutely a narcissist. Also, okay, hang on.
But it's also... Oh.
And the other one, the schizophrenia, is there is a hero with schizophrenia.
Moon Knight with DID.
Yes.
Yes.
Moon Knight has DID. I'm sorry, not schizophrenia, DID.
DID.
That is my...
Schizophrenia and DID are
two
very different
things.
And also saying DID is... identity disorder.
Yes.
Differential identity disorder.
Differential identity disorder.
Used to also be called multiple personality syndrome.
Mm-hmm. But you do definitely see, like,
yes.
Most of the time.
Most
you do
of
see
the time.
The mental illnesses are the villains. But what you also see, you don't really realize what the heroes are going through, because they're depicted as so powerful and, like, that they can get through
anything. Overcoming.
And
where
they're
the
overcoming.
Villains are like, oh, no,
you
succumbed,
like,
to this.
Even though you have, like, and they do... touch on it, I don't think enough, but like with Captain America, who wakes up in a different century.
Oh, yeah.
Newer Captain America deals with it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Older Captain America fully did
not. No.
There was no such thing as PTSD.
And while this is, no, like while he's also like completely changed from his own time, he also is dealing with PTSD from losing his best friend that he thinks is dead.
Yeah.
The love of his life. Being with Alzheimer's,
yeah,
like his whole world is just rocked.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And you kind of like you want to admire it, but at the same time, it's not realistically presented.
Also, it's presented as a good on you, you overcame.
Yeah,
it's one of those ones where, as we were talking earlier about either they're villains or they're cured.
Yeah,
and like with a lot of those things. Like, as well, like I live with general anxiety disorder, major depressive disorder, and ADHD, those are debilitating, but there is no cure. There's no magic. I'm a good guy, so now my brain makes the right chemicals. Dear Lord, if that was the actual thing, I will start vigilanteism now.
Captain Britain.
Oh.
Alcoholic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
The heroes that we see with abilities, with mental disabilities, are a little bit newer, and also it's still like overcoming something, or they're an anti-hero, where it's a lot more villains are thrown into asylums, which does really harken back to to the early 1900s, where you were just undesirable. Let's put you into an asylum.
I also feel like DC plays with the mental illness stuff a lot more than Marvel, though.
And I
would agree with that. Yeah.
And I blame them. I don't like Alan Moore. I'm sorry. If you like Alan Moore, great for you.
Yeah, which
because
is...
it's like...
There are so many problems with that story.
Because he was too grimdark. And it was very much like everyone was an insane criminal, and
so I would like to further that point. I feel also as though DC does this, especially they don't always put labels on the mental illness. You just have a character who turns into a villain because of
You have sane and insane.
You have
and
sane
those are
and
only
insane.
Two things.
So here's an example. I'm going to bring up body dysphoria.
And there are one too after you.
Yeah. There are two characters who end up with body dysphoria. Two-Face, for obvious reasons.
That was the one I was thinking.
Oh, I will leave that one to you.
No, you're fine.
The one that I am particularly fascinated with is Clayface.
Mm-hmm.
Clayface wasn't originally, he didn't intend to be a villain. He was an actor, and he wanted his face to be pretty for as long as possible. So he started putting creams on his face, and he started getting obsessive over his appearance, and he kept using more stuff, and he kept using more stuff, and it destroyed his body. And he became the thing that he feared the most, which was, he became a body dysphoria. And that thing, that body dysphoria, it led him to that. And we can see that now because it's talked about more now, but it was never addressed in the series specifically that I'm thinking of is the 90s cartoon, Batman. Mm-hmm. I grew up on that, you know? And they kept it good and dark.
I will disagree that the 90s Batman, I would not consider to be grimdark because it did have an underlayer of hope to it.
I didn't that mean necessarily grimdark, yeah. but if you compare the 90s cartoons to the cartoons that kiddos watch today.
Oh, it's dark.
Yeah. Oh, dark.
I'm going to get the name wrong. V.
V is for, yeah.
The Superhero University.
Okay.
I'm
not familiar with that.
Homelander.
Oh. Okay, the boys.
Oh. Right, the boys. Oh. The boys universe.
Oh, man.
But it's the university where they send the kids
the spin-off.
Have the ability.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are perfectly nice, lovely young people. And then there's just the psychos.
I'm not gonna lie, I actually like the boys because of the whole, like, heroes aren't actually heroes.
I like how they did that.
I couldn't watch the show.
Weird experience,
But I overall liked it. Like,
so I read like the first graphic novel of the boys, and it was very off-putting to me.
Oh, extremely.
But it's extremely off-putting because the way, once again, they depicted a lot of things. It was depicting things to, like, a 12-year-old boy and saying this is bad, but not actually saying why it's bad.
Okay. Yeah. I can see it.
And then,
like, they don't refer to them as heroes. They say suits.
Yeah.
You've got special abilities, but that doesn't make you a hero.
When I tried watching the show, it was very much like within the first 20 minutes of the show, there is a depiction of sexual assault in it, and I was like, I can't.
You have to be like,
it has a little bit of that. So, like, the boys just have some really great examples of it. I can't personally talk on it because of the fact that
it's really hard to watch.
It's hard to read as well. The graphic novel is so much worse than the show.
Wow.
I do not recommend.
To be, like, as offensive as possible.
It was designed to be as offensive as possible.
I think it was designed to make you rethink a bit, too, about, like, heroes.
It was also designed to be as, like,
in your face.
In your face. Yeah. It's very juvenile.
Yeah.
It's very juvenile about how in your face it is. Doom Patrol is a really good one. A good one, too, with the show with I forget his name, the robot.
Brendan Fraser's
character, because of the fact that, like, that's how he's dealing with his disability and dealing with chronic pain. I was also going to bring up Deadpool with chronic pain.
Yeah,
because one of the things about Deadpool is, before he got his, he signed up to get his regenerative powers because he had cancer.
And now he has.
Because he got regenerative powers, everything in him regenerates, including the cancer. And so Deadpool is one of those people who live in constant pain. He is in constant chronic pain. And that's actually a thing that informs his character a lot and informs the humor.
Yep. I got two examples. One backwards, one forwards. I'll start with, compared to you, Wolverine. Mm-hmm. Not depicted well, but definitely has chronic pain.
Yeah.
Because of every injury, having healed with that metal and having metal just inside you,
yeah,
definitely is going to mess with your body. It's going to really mess things up. And they show him as a very, very strong character that can, like, you know, overcome anything, but, like, also sometimes they do show how much pain he does get into when he gets really messed up.
Yeah.
the other person I was going to say for her example to go off of from hero to villain, Mobius. He set out first to try to help a blood disorder and then became a villain because he screwed up trying to help people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, also within the comics there, I would put Mobius in the whole, like, mad scientist tries to cure a thing and ends up bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because there's Mobius, and then there's the lizard from Spider-Man, who is like, I want my arm back.
Oh, and you can do that with an example for that is Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
I hate Doctor Strange because of the way they depicted it. I'm going to get magic just so I can cure my hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was mad about that scenario. I could not get into it.
I mean, and that's always been Doctor Strange. That's always been. And in the movies and whatever, newer media actually starts.
They did a better job.
They did a better job. They're starting to portray it as a negative thing and as a character. Starting to portray it as a character flaw.
Oh, it's fine, but not with Doctor Strange. When I watched the first movie, this person goes to every single possibility to cure his hands until he finds magic.
Yeah.
And yes, I know technically, like, I know a lot of people like Doctor Strange and like the way that works, but I'm just, I think I get triggered by it. Sorry. I think I get triggered by it because of my own paralysis, mm-hmm. and that's just a personal scenario. Having a person go like, oh no, I got into a car accident, and that's the Marvel cinematic version, and going suddenly to being like, oh hey, I obviously need to cure everything because of what I do, again, is horribly unrealistic for me.
Yes.
Okay.
I only know superheroes for TV. I've not read any of the comics.
Oh, that's fine.
And I really only watched them once or twice. But didn't, when Doctor Strange, did he heal his hands in the end?
No, they're still damaged.
Okay. They're still damaged.
The magic itself makes it to where he doesn't have the twitching when he is performing.
When he, yeah. And it's like in the comics, in the movies, he's still no longer a gifted. He no longer gains his ability to do surgery again.
Yeah.
And so as someone who is able-bodied, that if something were to happen to me physically, I probably would try every single thing possible to get back to my normal, because he felt he was on top of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he's...
It's, but in that case, it's using a disability to teach the abled person, like, we're going to make this abled person disabled to teach him a lesson. And we're taking a person from able to disabled to able, because then, like, yes, he was here, they dropped him to here, and they made him up here because of magic, so he's, like, now super abled.
Now, if they had done it in a way where the magic still affected his disability, or if there was still shaking, or if there's still a problem, I would have been a lot more cool. You're overcoming it, you're doing something else that's helping, and you can do something else. And yes, he can do something else now. However, they put him so high up that it just erased his disability.
So they didn't show enough of his daily, like, not a struggle.
But
the everyday life of living with that.
They don't show him. They don't show the damage to his hands.
They're inconsistent.
I think that would be superb.
I would love that.
Doctor Strange making himself tea.
If they actually show a tremor.
Yeah.
Like when he's having a tea.
It wouldn't take much.
Yeah.
They're inconsistent. There's no tremors.
There's no tremors. There's no after effects.
They forget.
There's no gray area. Was he cured, or is he still living?
Yeah.
There's no
you don't
resolution.
Depending, like, if you really stare at his hands in certain scenes, his hands do shake, but it's just like you said.
And they show scars.
That's also the actor being very good.
Yeah.
That's Cumberbatch.
Very much so.
Let's not call Cumberbatch that good. I mean, he's good in certain things.
No, real duel.
I have a thing, though. Here's the thing that bothers me about Doctor Strange is they minimize on the main character. There is one glowing point that I really liked in the film, which is when he was at one of his highest points of frustration trying to learn the magic, his master told him, look, it's not about the shape of your hands, it's about the intention. And she shows off one of the other students who has lost one of his hands. He has no hand to gesture with, and he can still do magic.
Yep.
But they didn't embrace that through the rest of the film. It's just this one glowing moment of thank you for showing that adaptability works. But never mind, we're just going to go, you know, we're going to keep going with the original intention here.
And then, it's not shown enough.
So back to your question, yes, they should. Like, it's like the example said, if something happened to you, you would do everything you possibly could within there. But the fact that they don't show after he found his solution, the after effects of him still living with it.
Because
he wasn't cured. But
he kind of was. Anyway.
Hawkeye, the new Hawkeye, I love, and once again, really does show hard of hearing in a very good way.
Stop it.
does show hard of someone losing their hearing in actually a really nice light of learn of actually taking the active time to learn another language to help them survive in the world. And also, and things, and everything of that nature, and this is once again, this is specifically the newest run of Hawkeye, because that is the one where he is actually shown as hard of hearing with this disability, and showing him learning and showing him dealing with it on an ongoing basis.
Is this comic or cinematic?
This is comic.
Okay.
Oh, it's a little.
No, it was in the comics. The bomb went off, and he did.
Yeah, in the comic. Okay. In the cinematic. It's the most background microscopic thing. It's like Disney saying they have a gay character in something.
Representation.
So what about Echo?
We
need to talk about Echo.
I do have a fun thing to say about Echo, which is
absolutely love her.
They depicted such as she is very much a deaf character running through a hearing world. And one of the only people that she has any contact with that has an interpreter with him to speak with Echo is Kingpin.
Yep.
The villain is one of the only ones who adapts around to properly communicate.
Here, let me tell you
also,
what I'm going to screw up.
Also, the TV show Echo correctly shows people how also to use an interpreter. A lot of times when you see deaf characters and they're using an interpreter, they show incorrectly how to use an interpreter. I just have to say, it's one of my favorite things about it, is they show correctly how you're supposed to utilize an interpreter.
And I may have misspoke because I didn't watch the whole series.
I was like, totally.
So I apologize.
No, it was just that, like, even Echo makes the point, it's like, you're one of the most important people in my life, and you didn't take the time to learn how to sign.
Yeah.
It's her family.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you just hired an interpreter.
He did get a high-tech device.
The thing about devices that interpret ASL that I have a hard time with, because once again, one of my best friends is an ASL interpreter. I do have deaf friends, and that sounds really awful, but I am not in the deaf community. I am just adjacent to it. Is any devices that actually, like, there was big gloves that interpret ASL and things that help interpret ASL, it's showing interpreting English to English, and there's a lot of ASL that is nuanced facial. It's like nuanced facial expressions, nuanced body language. It's very small, very slight, and so it would be really hard to program an AI to know what a slight eyebrow twitch could mean. It's really hard to know that shifting from here to here is a difference of either time, personage, because this could be two people, this can be time, this could be a different location. There's so much nuance in the language itself that anytime they show a technology, I love the interaction on Echo saying, you didn't learn my language. Mm-hmm. And then his thing is, I'll just get technology. I think, honestly, for him not learning the language, him having an interpreter is the best, actually, suggestion, the best situation. And in that case, it's her going, you're not joining my culture. You decided not to join me and participate in my culture when I've wanted you to, because you're like, you're a family to me. But you are keeping your culture separate from mine.
And I lost mine.
Yeah.
With the interpreter.
Yeah.
I was like, you did not do that.
Yeah. The ethics with some of the interpreter, not great. But actually one of the best interactions on how to use an interpreter with a deaf individual. Letting you guys know, if you're ever in a situation where you're talking to someone and if they're speaking ASL and they're talking to an interpreter, don't address the interpreter.
Ever.
Do not address the interpreter. Address the person. That's what the interpreter is for. They're there as a mobility. Like, the best thing would be like, if I went to Sterling and started talking to her wheelchair.
Or when you're a good reference for that as well is sometimes when I'm with Marlene.
Yeah.
And we're together. Marlene is addressed about me, and I'm not talking to you.
So it has to be a redirect of, she's right here.
I'm right here, talk to me.
She's right
I'm
there.
I'm 6 foot tall, but I'm still here.
Since I was saying about, I want to bring the point of telling you how to use an interpreter, since I said that there's good ways and bad ways to use one. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I do got to say,
we're
at 10:59, so questions and comments is where we're at. So
I can just go on with these days.
Adjacent to sign language. I don't know if you guys ever watched The Expanse, but I did like how they adapted sign language when they're out in spacesuits, because mic cuts off, you have to communicate somehow.
The Expanse did a lot of things very well and very correctly, especially with, I love language. And I can go off on a whole other thing. I'm not going to, but if you ever want to know how much I will geek out about the linguistics about The Expanse, we can talk later.
the 14 different languages they use to make a Belker language.
Yes, it's so good. All right.
There's so many good things about it.
I just found it really interesting, though, the practical use. Even though no one had this ability to say, it was just, hey, you can use this for communication.
There's a lot of things that we use in everyday life now that we have gotten from different disabled communities that are amazing advantages that we don't think of.
The U.S. military in the field has, I'm going to call it ASL shorthand. But I mean, there are a number
thanks the deaf community,
communications that are done silently.
The biggest thing, thanks the deaf community, that we all use every day in this room that has further the way we communicate is texting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that.
If you send a text to anyone, you should thank the deaf community for pushing for that and having it be something that was a accessibility thing for one group of people that everyone has embraced.
I mean, that's like subtitles on TV. I mean,
subtitles on TV.
As a society, if you adapt to people with disabilities, it only improves people who are able to.
It makes things better.
And it everybody.
So there are ways to make subtitles more accessible as well.
Cards!
We got cards for you guys real quick. Too, while we're talking.
Accessibility in YouTube videos, for instance. People will often just automatically do subtitles. They'll have it auto-generate. Not the greatest. That's not entirely accessible. That's not entirely accepting. Having subtitles ingrained in the video so that it's your script, it's your interpretation of your language, is one of the best ways that you can include the deaf community in your content.
Yeah.
And almost nobody does it, but you can tell when they do. Because they'll be able to put the subtitles somewhere where it's kind of out of the way, but it's always there for reference. And it's not a choice. It's in the video.
So the cards I'm handing out is to the Asgardians community on Facebook. We actually have a really great community that these two of the past year have fostered that is absolutely amazing, and there's a full discussion and discourse, and also needing to rant about things and ask questions. That's a disability resource where it's kind of everyone banding together and being like, hey, does anyone know this? And how I can do this, how I can do that, X, Y, Z, or oh my God, I've...
Yeah, we specifically, I'll go into a little more detail, we have workshop chats, so if you're working on any maker projects, you can post there. If you want to give advice to people who are working on stuff, you can post there. We have Boiler Room, the Boiler Room chat, which is just hang out.
It's, that's just the chat of being, hey, we're all nerds, hey, and I had this cool thought in my head, and I wanted to tell y'all.
Do penguins have fluffy feet? I don't know. Like, you can write whatever you want in that one. We have Critter Corner, so you can share your fluffy animals. The most important one, though, and it relates to this panel, is our disability resources chat. And that's where you can discuss if you have anything that you need or have any advice that you see. You can come and talk there, and everybody's very welcoming to talk about mental illness, invisible disabilities, physical disabilities.
It is a safe space. So if you have a question about a disability and you think it's dumb, ask us. Because
yes,
either somebody in the community is going to have an answer, or we'll find it for you.
Oh, yeah, that is one of those...
some of the nicest people on the planet, honestly.
That chat room is definitely started from Cincinnati last year because they wanted the conversation to keep going. And so it can be any subject.
Yes.
If you want to talk more about Heroes and Disabilities, go to that chat room and talk about it. We're all for that. We love it. So it's on Facebook, called Dad's Guardian.
Join the chaos!
Join the chaos! But does anybody have any other comments?
Any last comments, questions?
Cool. Thanks for sharing this conversation
with us.
Yes.
It was
thank you for coming so much.
It was fun.
Thank you for listening to the Creative Playin' Podcast Network. If you enjoyed our show, please check out D&D Journey of the 5th Edition and Ragnarok and Roll a Scion Hero to Ragnarok Story. Also, check out our Patreon page for more content and behind-the-scenes things, as well as joining us for a one-shot game or two.